Evidently not.
But I watch a lot of them.
Morning, everybody. I'll call to order the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development for Wednesday, May 13th, and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 935. That's Matt. Welcome. In any order you choose.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis representing Lloyd's of America as well as Surplus Line Association today. I'll keep our comments brief. Senate Bill 935 was introduced at the request of Lloyd's of America and deals with wet marine and transportation insurance. Wet marine and transportation insurance is typically insurance around large cargo vessels, container ships, barges that are transporting wheat up and down the Columbia, those types of things, and is written in the non-admitted market. And the non-admitted market in the insurance world is things other than, you know, the State Farm and Farmers of the world. These are usually large and high-risk policies. It's been written this way since as long as anybody can remember. A few months ago, a question arose within the insurance division to ask, can insurance be written through this way? And the insurance division, in looking through the statute, said, wait, there may be some technical issues about how this is currently operating. And hence we have Senate Bill 935, which is really a technical fix to make sure that this insurance can be written as it has been for a long period of time. We worked with the insurance division with the drafting of the language, and they are fine with this language, is what they tell me. And with that, I'm going to hand it over here to more of an expert that actually writes this type of insurance and can better explain it than I can. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you very much for letting me be here today. My name is Bill Hurst. I'm the president of Derma Bates Agencies, Inc. in Portland. We're an insurance broker. We've been in business since 1907 when we started as solely a marine insurance broker, insuring, for the most part at that time, timber and lumber being shipped out of the Northwest. Even today, 2015, marine insurance is a big part of our business, but it's also a big part of what goes on in the state of Oregon. We insure ships, tugs, barges, cargo, operating and trading around the world. Both imports coming into this state, exports going out. We insure vessels operating on the Columbia, Snake, Willamette, Yaquina, Coos Rivers, part of our international trade, but also our interstate as well. For the most part, marine insurance cannot be written with admitted or licensed insurance carriers because they neither have an appetite for it nor the capacity for it. So it ends up being placed with companies that do not have a license to be insured, or do not have a license in Oregon, but they don't have a license in any of the 50 states. An example of this is one that probably comes home to all of us, and it was the new Carissa, which I think everybody remembers. It was February 1999. Unloaded wood chip carrier coming into Coos Bay got driven ashore by a storm. It was one of the largest environmental disasters we've ever had in the state of Oregon. By the time it was done, it took almost 9 years to get her off the beach. The pollution that was there all added up to about well over $60 million. And it was insured with a non-admitted insurer. It was insured with a mutual insurer based in the UK that is one of 13 mutual insurers that provide insurance for 95% of all the ships trading in the world. That's how they buy their insurance. And they are not admitted in Oregon or any of the 50 states, but they provide for every ship that comes in here, they're providing up to $1 billion worth of oil pollution coverage and up to $3 billion for any of the liabilities of a ship owner. It's important to have this. It's important to the state of Oregon. It's important to one of our biggest employers, Nike, who brings in their goods. It's important to wheat farmers who send their wheat overseas. That insurance all is being placed with the non-admitted insurance market. With that, I respectfully request that you pass Senate Bill 935. If there are any questions, we'll give it a try.
Questions?
So just so I have this clear, it doesn't change anything from the way we're operating. It only clarifies that the way we're operating is okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davis, that is correct. But since the insurance division ruled the way that they did a few months ago, there's been no policies written since that day. So if we don't clarify, we're not going to have policies written in the future.
Thank you.
And that leads into my next question, which I see an amendment that adds an emergency clause.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, yes. And my apologies for not mentioning that the Dash 1 amendments is an emergency clause to make this effective upon passage so that people can get insurance on these types of scenarios.
Good. Other questions?
Sounds good to me.
Great. Thank you.
Would anyone else be like to be heard on Senate Bill 935? Thank you. With that, I'll close the public hearing.
Thank you very much.
935. Thank you. Close the public hearing and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 714A. And my apologies, Patrick, you have the stage now.
Yes. Come on last, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Senate Bill 714A comes to our committee after a Senate floor vote of 28-0. There's no fiscal or revenue impact and no amendments. The measure prohibits motor vehicle manufacturers, distributors, and importers from taking any adverse action against a motor vehicle dealer because the dealer sold a motor vehicle to a customer that subsequently exported the vehicle or sold it for export. There are some exceptions in the bill, but I'm sure Mr. Dewey will cover those for us.
Very good. With that, let's call Mike Dewey. Mr. Dewey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mike Dewey on behalf of the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. ORS 650 spills out franchise laws pertaining to the Oregon auto dealers, new car dealers, and the auto manufacturers. And you'd be surprised about how many issues we have over time that we resolve by statute, sometimes, unfortunately. Happy to announce that on this bill we do have an agreement with the manufacturers. Mr. Reinhardt is here and the Global Alliance. Basically, the gut of the bill is in page 5, the new language. And it deals with cars that are exported primarily from Oregon to Asia, and some high-end cars, exotic cars can fetch $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 more in Asia, Hong Kong, for example, than originally purchased in Oregon for a variety of reasons. As a part of the dealer's responsibility, they need to do their due diligence to ensure, based upon their agreements, that they look to determine, ascertain if a car is going to be exported. And there is a do not sell list, quite frankly. It's kind of like a do not fly list that in order to do the due diligence, you look at the list to see if anybody's on that list that has might engaged in this activity in the past. And then you're required, you're going to be at risk not to sell that car to that individual. So to get around that, there are companies now that will go out and find somebody who, on their own credit, will go out and buy a car and keep it for a bit of a time. And then that company has an agreement to purchase the car above and beyond the price that they paid for that particular car for export. And what happens is, from time to time, the car dealers get caught with regard to these agreements. And if there are incentives on the car, they might be $1,000, $1,500 from the manufacturer, those are clawed back. And if you will, all the profit made on that car is gone. And also the employees suffer because they sold that car, and guess what? They didn't sell that car at the end of the day. So what we have in the gist of this bill is it's kind of a knowing clause. You're going to do your due diligence. If you did your due diligence, then it's assumed that you did not know that that car was going to go to export. And that's the language on page 5 of the bill. And it basically is intent. If you should have known, then there will be ramifications. But if you didn't know and you did all of your due diligence, then you can't be penalized. Now, this bill goes into effect on the regular effective date, but in terms of the agreements and the contract, when contracts are renewed or franchises are renewed. So again, we have an agreement with the manufacturers in this statute is similar to other statutes in other states. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you. So currently, can dealers, through agreement with the manufacturers, export cars?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, could you say that again?
So currently, can the dealer themselves export the cars? I'm understanding the problem here is the dealer has sold it, and they thought they sold it to a customer, who in turn then sold the car, shipped overseas. But
yes.
Is there a provision that allows the dealers to export the car?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lively, no, they cannot.
If I might. Sure. So I guess I'm just trying to understand this problem from the standpoint of the dealer. But the dealers, all this is saying they have to have sold it under good faith, knowing it wasn't going to be exported. Because in the past, they didn't have to ask if somebody was going to export it. I'm just not understanding. You get the car, you sell the car to somebody, and what they do with it is their business, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. So Representative Davis and Representative Lively, so what we have here is in terms of the area of responsibility that the manufacturer has agreements with in, let's say, Hong Kong with dealers there.
Mm, okay.
And they do not want cars from Oregon to go into that market for a lot of different reasons. And so we're required to do our due diligence to make sure that that car is not going to be to export it, because that's part of the requirement of the franchise, that clearly the manufacturers do not want these cars to be exported outside the United States. It changes the whole model at that point in time, so the business model at that point. And so it's very interesting because you now have this do not sell list, and now companies are getting around this by figuring out a way to hire me, for example. I haven't done that, or anybody else, to make a quick buck, and you can do it. We just want to make sure that we're kind of indemnifying the auto dealer here. When they do what they need to do, they can't be penalized.
Further questions?
I'm good with that.
I'm wondering if I could get Mr. Reinhart to just, on the record, say the dealer, the manufacturers are good to go.
After I consult with Mr. Dewey, could we go out here for a second?
Sure, we'll recess for 60 seconds.
60 seconds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, we're back on the record for Senate Bill 714.
It's Chair Davis.
Thank you. Sounds so good.
I can tell you that we have reached agreement on this.
For the record, your name?
Dave Reinhart, representing General Motors here today. And we are a member of the U.S. Auto Alliance.
Thank you. Questions for the Auto Alliance or General Motors? Excuse me, for General Motors, which is only a member.
Yes.
So I just find this fascinating. But so I'm trying to understand. So there's no trade requirements or restrictions. I mean, we're talking about international trade here. And so I'm trying to understand this role, how this plays out versus what agreements and things we have in place regarding trading with other countries. I guess I don't know.
Yeah, I wish I could offer more clarity on that, and I could wing it by saying that they are the people in Taiwan, the folks that sell our cars in Taiwan have a franchise agreement that this
is part of the
this
agreement.
Circumvents this kind of practice circumvents. And
if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Lively, this is around the franchise and what
that's
you
right,
can
right.
and cannot do within the franchise. And you have a whole lot of other obligations within that franchise in order to comply with what that contract is.
Thank you.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how many times has this happened in the last couple of years?
Representative Davis, Representative Benz, I don't know the answer to that. I did have an interesting conversation. Hopefully, I'll not be out of order here with Representative Fagan, whose husband works for a dealership. And this is from time to time in selling a car. They have been, as I understand it, they have been there's been a clawback docked for cars that have been exported.
Yes, Representative Benz, not Chairman Benz. I can't answer with a number, but I can tell you when this issue first came up, when we first started discussing this problem or this opportunity, there were just a number of dealers where this has been a problem, and to the extent where you have a no-sell list, mm-hmm. it's obviously a problem, and it is an opportunity because you're talking about $30,000 to $50,000 per vehicle, which got my attention.
Other questions or follow-ups? Representative McClain.
Okay, well, it was really simple, and you guys got started talking. So.
All right.
Okay, here we go. What I see is trying to make sure that people who did the right thing, followed all the regulations they're supposed to follow in selling a car, are not being hurt.
Correct.
I mean, that's what we're doing, bottom line. Now, there may be some other laws that are federal laws or import-export laws that apply to all of this. But we're not doing anything other than saying that in the state of Oregon, that anybody who has done due process with selling a car is going to be held harmless.
Yes, that's all correct. We're doing, Representative. For example, we have red flag rules. Mm-hmm. And basically, you have to do, in part, one of the reasons it might take a little longer than you want when you buy your car to sit down and work through the paperwork, okay. to make sure... you are who you are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have Homeland Security mm-hmm. With cars that are $10,000, you pay cash, certain things we have to do. So there's a whole gist of requirements, mm-hmm. and one of them in our franchise is this do not sell list, and who would have thought you needed to have something like that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But dealers have been penalized, and we just want to make it fair, and mm-hmm. that's why we have this agreement.
Okay. And this provides that mechanism to do that.
Okay.
Mr. Dewey, I just want to note that there are a number of changes made on pages 1 through 4 of the bill. I'm presuming those were legislative counsel's opportunity to clean up the statute, and no substantive policy changes are intended?
Mr. Chair, when I first looked at the bill and we had it introduced and I was reading it, I'm going, wow, we've got some, and then I realized this was just merely the verbiage that was being used and making it clear in terms of how the statute would read, and that's all that does.
Thanks. And I'll make clear for the record that certainly if we move this bill, that's my intent, is that the changes on 1 through 4 have no policy bearing or policy changes, but are simply cleanup.
We understand.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we had a similar bill coming up in another situation involving manufacturers and agricultural equipment dealers. There's quite a bit of debate about whether or not this type of statute could apply to existing contracts. And so the question was, are we constitutionally prohibited from altering a contract? It rings a bell for some reason. I think there might have been a Supreme Court case on it recently.
Yeah.
And so the question is here, is that an issue?
Section 2 of the bill on page 5 makes it clear that the amendments apply to agreements that a dealer enters into or renews after the effective date.
Mm. Follow up. Yes, we had the same discussion of whether or not a renewal was in truth a new contract, and I think someone said that indeed it is, because the phrase renew means it's new as opposed to extend. So the thought here is if that gets around the modification, it wouldn't apply to extensions.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, both.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Would anybody else like to be heard on Senate Bill 714A? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 714.
If I may clarify, Mr. Chair, just so the folks who just testified know, this bill is already scheduled for work session on Monday.
Thank you. That's great to know. Okay, let's do some work. Members, are you ready to do all the work sessions?
I don't know.
Well, we've got some fun planned. All right, with that, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 192A. Mr. Bennett, yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. Senate Bill 192A, we heard on the 29th of April, directs the Parks and Recreation Department to convene a work group to examine options for allowing users of ATVs to operate on state highways and to report the findings of that work group to the appropriate committees on the Legislative Assembly, this one presumably, no later than September 15th of next year, and it would also sunset on December 31st of next year. There's no amendment to this bill. It had minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and the Senate floor vote was 30-0.
Thank you. Representative Bentz.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 192A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bentz moves Senate Bill 192A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? With that, the motion passes, and we will assign this bill to Representative Widener, I believe. He's our ATV House member for this year.
Right in.
He will have to request the use of a visual aid before he can do that. All right, with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 192A and open a work session on Senate Bill 254.
All right, let's see, Mr. Chair. We heard this one also on April 29th that increases the fee on motor vehicle fuel metering instruments or devices in accordance with graduated schedule that are in the bill. It becomes operative the 2016 January 1st. It has an emergency clause, so the measure would take effect upon passage. There's no amendment. There's a minimal fiscal impact. There's also a revenue impact, and the measure does come to us with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue, so you all get to see this again if this motion passes.
You're good. Representative Bentz.
I leave those three ones out.
You
don't care.
That's the formal way of saying
it. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 254 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the measure be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Bentz moves that Senate Bill 254 be referred to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a prior reference to revenue. And to revenue by prior reference, excuse me. any discussion? Yeah, he didn't give me a
speech.
Oh, it's right there, excuse me. Any discussion?
No. Who would dare?
I would.
Mr. McLean.
I was really interested in this when they presented in front of us, and I thought they had some really good reasons on why we needed to do this. And it's amazing when you think about how much they've done on a fee of this sort, and
yes.
I think it's going to be good for us and good for the process.
And I would ask, Mr. Brennan, the follow-up letter that the Department of Ag sent, which I believe came through you to the committee members on this bill, has that been uploaded to OLIS?
I don't know if it has, Mr. Chair, but we can get it up to OLIS.
If you could, I'd just like to say that was a very helpful letter. I thought I had asked that the staff do some homework on why they couldn't simply scale back the program. I think they did a very nice job. It'd be nice to have that letter in the record. Any further discussion? Any objection? With that, the motion carries. Bill moves to revenue. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 254 and open a work session on Senate Bill 921. Mr. Brennan.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 921, heard this on the 29th of April. Also, directs the Department of Transportation to make efforts to complete installation of median barriers between opposing lanes of travel on interstate highways where the distance between lanes is 100 feet or less, except in segments designated for emergency access or where the department determines such a barrier may create a safety or operational hazard. There's no amendment to this bill. It has no fiscal or revenue impact, and the vote in the Senate was 28-1.
That's true. Very good. Representative Bentz.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 921 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bentz moves Senate Bill 921 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. Bill moves to the floor, and I believe we will assign to...
We're going to hold on that. I think that we're requesting to the speaker's office see if she would like to carry.
Okay, we're going to see if the speaker would like to carry, as she is a co-chief sponsor, but we will hold off on a final determination. We'll close a work session on Senate Bill 921. Members, anything else for the good of the order? Patrick, could you give us a preview of Friday?
Oh, sure, Mr. Chair.
I will not be here on Friday. They said I could chair one day, and then I couldn't come back. Yeah, so... That's the way the cookie crumbles.
So Friday we have three hearings and I believe five work sessions up Friday. So we're going to hear three bills dealing with the Pacific Wonderland license plate, an interesting one on lane splitting for motorcycles.
Yes.
There's going to be a lot of information posted on OLIS as of tomorrow for you to look at. I think we've received probably 15 pieces so far. And then we're also going to hear one about county registration fees. And then also work sessions on five bills that we've heard previously, Mr. Chair.
Can you just give us a quick preview of those five?
Oh, sure, yeah. The William Tebow Memorial Highway, the DLCD rules or amendments referring to transportation improvements.
This is the work together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, next.
The membership for the Travel Information Council, the deregulation of motor carriers of persons, and JTA reallocation.
Very good. And I do know that Representative Hack and myself will not be here, so please let your respective vice chairs know if you're going to have any issues with any of the work sessions, because we'll have vote issues if we do. So, with that, we'll close the public hearing, and thank you, everybody.
Nice job.
And thank you, everybody.